On this fourth day of January 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, titled General History, to chapter 29, texts 13 and 14. And we'll read just 13, I'll do 14 myself. Iti sarvani bhutani. Madbhavena mahadyute. Sabhadriyan manyamano. Jnanam kevalamashritaha. Translation. O brilliant Uddhava, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, and who, by taking shelter of this divine knowledge, offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. Such a man sees equally the Brahmin and the outcast, the thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture, the sun and the tiny sparks of fire, the gentle and the cruel. Purport. A series of opposites is set forth here, namely the high-class Brahmin and the low-class aborigine, the thief who steals from respectable persons, and the respecter of Brahminical culture who gives charity to Brahmins, the all-powerful sun and the insignificant spark, and finally, the kind and the cruel. Ordinarily, the ability to distinguish between such opposites qualifies one as intelligent. How then can the Lord state that ignoring such obvious differences establishes one as a wise man? The answer is given by the words madbhavena. A wise person sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead within everything. Therefore, although externally perceiving and dealing with the varieties of material situations, a wise man is more impressed by and concerned with the overwhelming unity of all existence, which is based on the presence of the Supreme Lord within everything. As explained here, a truly wise person is not limited to superficial material discrimination. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So Krishna is winding up in this chapter his instruction. The Uddhava Gita culminates in this chapter. And here he's describing bhakti yoga. And he's actually describing in this verse one of the main characteristics of the Mahabhagavat. If you read the 11th canto, 3rd chapter, I think it is, you'll find the instructions of the 9 yogendras to Maharaj Nimi. And one of the questions is, how can we understand the different levels of devotees? Because, as I mentioned last night, we are simply associating with different manifestations of Krishna's energy in this world. And as we associate, we determine our destiny. So Krishna consciousness, the training in Krishna consciousness, is also how do we associate, how do we relate to Krishna, his paraphernalia, his devotees, the non-devotees, the demons, everything. There's a Krishna-conscious way of seeing and relating to everything. So the first description of the Mahabhagavat, the great devotee who is fully Krishna-conscious, is precisely this. Sarva-bhuteshya-yak-parshed bhagavad-bhavam-atmanaha bhutani bhagavat-yatman esha bhagavat-ottama. Sarva-bhuteshya-yak-parshed bhagavad-bhavam-atmanaha. That within all living beings, seeing the Lord, seeing the personality of Godhead, Bhagavad Bhavam Atman, and seeing the Lord within everything. As Krishna says the same thing in the 6th chapter. Yomam pashyati sarvatra savam chamai pashyati tasyaham na punashyami satami na punashyati. One who sees me and everything in me, I'm never lost to him, nor he's ever lost to me. So this development of the transcendental vision is a large part of our description of progress in devotional service. We find also in the 13th chapter, text 28 and 29, Krishna is talking about the same thing here. He says, one who sees the super soul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies and who understands that neither the soul nor the supersoul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, actually sees. One who sees the supersoul equally present everywhere, in every living being, does not degrade himself by his mind. Thus he approaches the transcendental destination. So how to attain this transcendental vision? Well, part of it is hearing. Part of it is hearing repeatedly Krishna describing that this is the reality, that everything is, as we've discussed many times, is coming from Krishna. He declares it in the Bhagavad Gita, and all the great acharyas and incarnations say the same thing, that everything is coming from Krishna, and he also expands himself into everything as the supersoul. And so when we cultivate Krishna consciousness and we stop trying to exploit this world and exploit other living beings, then gradually that vision is given to us. It's not just a question of mental culture, but it's also a question of action. Because at the present moment, we are laboring under the influence of the modes of nature. And those modes of nature, when we act in the modes of nature, we strengthen them in our own mind. In other words, we're more likely to do that again. It's a mode, it's a habit, it's a conditioning. You know, the thing that you do today, you're more likely to do tomorrow, right? Good or bad. So rather than just allow ourselves to be battered around, you know, by whatever comes our way, whatever our karma is, we have a certain amount of independence. And that becomes meaningful when our intelligence is purified by hearing these instructions. And so we know, no, I shouldn't try to enjoy this material energy. I'm now taking my cue for how to act and how to not act from a transcendental source. And that includes the Shastra, includes the Guru, includes sadhus, saintly devotees who are learned and more advanced. And we take that instruction. We imbibe that conscience, if you will. You know, Freud had a term. That, maybe I'm getting this wrong. If someone, the superego, yeah. And the superego is kind of the conscience, and that's cultivated by what you learn. You know, that's given to you by your culture. You become sensitive to it. I mean, the supersoul is always there, giving us good instruction. But if we are in the modes of nature, the less we really respond to good instruction. We're just given whatever instinctual, you know, feeling we have, and it's all distorted by our mind and intelligence in the modes of nature. So we have our sense of self, but the superego is kind of the little voice inside. You know, that's the supersoul. And that strengthened, we can't hear directly because we're so covered. But just a few verses previous to this, I think I was in Chicago when you hit this verse, text 6, this key verse here, about how Uddhava is expressing his gratitude to Krishna. Naivopa yancha pachatim kabayastavesha brahmayusha vikrutam vidnu smadanta middamudak smadanta yontar bahisthanubhatam Ashubang vadunvan acharya cheta vapusha sukatim vyanakti. That, so Uddhava says, O my Lord, our transcendental poets and experts in spiritual science cannot fully express their indebtedness to you, even if they had were endowed with the long lifetime of Brahma. For you appear in two features, externally as the acharya, internally as a supersoul, to deliver the embodied living being by directing him how to come to you. Now, one thing he doesn't mention here is the external manifestation as the Shastra. But that's also a manifestation of the Supersoul. And the Shastra is really given by the Acharyas. You know, so in one sense, they're saying, but that's also a very important point. So what is he saying there is that those who really understand the great value of this transcendental knowledge that's coming down in the association, their hearts are overwhelmed with gratitude. Because it's just like every morning we sing. I like to point this out. The first words we sing, if we made it in time to Mangalarti, is Samsara Dava Nandalita Loka Tranaya. That's one big compound word. It has very deep meaning. First of all, he's saying that all living beings in this world, including us, were laboring and suffering in a forest fire of birth and death, old age and disease. And yet people, you know, go around not even understanding that. They're in denial. But that's the reality, right? So, but the spiritual master, the genuine spiritual master who is channeling, if I can use that word, all of the knowledge that's come before, beginning with Krishna, and giving it to us as it is, he is delivering those who can hear this knowledge from this forest fire by pouring down this knowledge and giving us instruction, just like a cloud of mercy pouring down, you know, extinguishing. So if someone, you know, you're in a forest fire and someone comes in a helicopter and pulls you out, you will thank them, right? Will you be a little thankful, a little grateful, you know? Or some doctor comes with a medicine to cure you of an incurable disease. I mean, any human being will be thankful for that, any person who's normal. So what to speak of saving us from millions of births in this forest fire? That's why he says they cannot even express their full gratitude, even in a lifetime of Brahma. And the other point is that we can't repay the debt. There's a debt, not only to the spiritual master, but all who have come before us. You know, to feel, all right, you can't repay it, but we have to try. And how to try? By becoming Krishna conscious and trying to give Krishna conscious to others. And it's simple, you know, as far as possible. So that sense of gratitude should lead us to take the instruction nicely and try to follow it. And if we do so, then we'll find that our vision is changing. You know, you don't really realize it, but over time your vision changes. And you don't see things in the same way as you did before. You can easily understand that when you go down on Harinam, say wherever we go, the gas lamp. So, I never lived in San Diego before, but I lived in New York, and I remember wandering the streets of Manhattan, Broadway and Times Square and everything, you know. I mean, I wasn't a super degraded enjoyer at that time, but I would wander around, you know. And did I want to go in this movie? Did I want to go in there? Did I want to go, you know? I don't think I ever went into the bars, but, you know. Basically, it was a field of enjoyment. You know, that's how I saw that place. So then a few years later, starting in, you know, 73, this was 68, starting in 73, the same streets, the same movie houses, the same bars, the same, everything is there. But I'm now on a Maha Harinam party. Every Friday, Saturday night, we would go out, you know, 100 devotees from the temple. See everything differently. I you don't see it as enjoyment. When we go on Harinam, does anyone actually see that, all those restaurants and everything, as a place of enjoyment? I don't. It's pitiful. You know, you're trying to help these people. They're sitting there at their $100 plates of abominable foodstuff and liquor, whatever they're drinking. And we're coming by, injecting the holy name in their ears, you know. You should feel like that. Somehow we're giving them the medicine, chant as purely and as enthusiastically as possible. Even once, twice in the Bhagavatam it says, I'm still working on it, I think Durvasa says, yannama shutimatrena purusham nirmala, something. That just hearing one holy name, hearing one holy name, completely purifies the soul. And so does Chitraketu in his prayers to Sankarshan, I believe it is. Forget the Sanskrit. But he said, just hearing, even a pukasha. Pukasha is an outcast, low-grade person who has no contact with the Vedic culture, is liberated. Vimuchite samsara is liberated from samsara. Now, we don't see these people as we go by, you know, suddenly getting up, kicking over their tables of abominable foodstuff and joining the party. That would be something. Maybe it'll happen one day. But still, we should feel that's we're somehow, as far as we can, helping Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya to deliver these people by letting him hear the holy name. You know, that's our function as devotees, right? So that's a whole different vision, isn't it? You're not seeing this as a place of enjoyment. You're seeing it as like a prison house. Or a place of suffering that we're, or a hospital ward that we have the remedy that we're somehow trying to distribute as far as possible. So similarly, the vision continued to change. You know, most famously, how does one see God in one's own heart? You know, Lord Brahma says, premanjana chudita bhakti velochanena sunda sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shyama sundaram achintu guna swarupam govindam adi purusham tamaham jami. This is Lord Brahma speaking. He should know. He's the head of our sampradaya. And he says, one who has anointed his eyes with the salve of prema, in other words, you develop love for Krishna, and therefore with those bhakti eyes, with the bhakti eyes, bhakti vilochanena, one always sees, the great devotee always sees Shyama Sundara within the heart. You know? You don't see the forearm for it, but you actually see Shyama Sundara. And wherever there is Shyama Sundara, I just heard Prabhupada say this, the question came up. Yes, there is Vrindavan, there are Radharani and Gopis, the whole world is there. The whole spiritual world is right there in our heart. But because of our contaminated vision due to millions of births of association with the modes of nature, we can't see that now. Another example is the television. This is another, Prabhupada gives this example. There's wonderful lectures, there's three or four of them to some students in Seattle in 1968. If you can find those lectures, listen to them. Each one begins, Prabhupada singing Govinda prayers. Govinda, Adi Purusha. He's singing. And then it ends and he gives a talk. And one of them, I think he's given on this verse, Premanjana, that this TV is being transmitted from transcendental television from Goloka Vrindavan. It's being transmitted into each one of our hearts. But we haven't got the tuner yet. We're not tuned in. Like you have a TV in the old days anyway. Where there's all this, it's just static, whatever, you know. So you have to tune it in. So Krishna consciousness is tuning in to see what's already there. It's not that we project it or imagine it. Krishna's already there. He's actually already there. So developing that vision, now what is the result of that? One who sees all living entities. Now, naturally, if you see Krishna in everyone, you see everyone's body as a temple of God, then how are you going to develop envy and enmity? You see? Everything in one sense is sacred. But that doesn't mean, because it's described here in the purport and elsewhere, that still one has to deal properly with each one. You don't deal with a tiger the same way you deal with a sadhu. You know, they both have Krishna in the heart, no doubt. But there's a proper way of dealing with each person. But you don't hate the tiger. You know, even the great devotees, they won't fear the tiger. Well, they'll deal properly because you got to preserve the body. But the emotions, the regard that you're having, that's informed by your transcendental vision. Vidyavaniya sampane brahmane kibhastani, famous verse in the fifth chapter. So, and here, Krishna, to make the point very obvious, he has these two wide contrasts. Each of these things is greatly at two ends of the spectrum. The Brahman and the outcast. You know, Brahman and the outcast. So just see to see them equally. In other words, each, for instance, should be given prasadam. It's not that you only give to the poor and you ignore the wealthy. They're also fallen. They're also completely covered. Maybe even more than the outcast. The outcast is at least humble. You know, humbled. You know, of course, without knowledge, it won't do them any good. But those who are wealthy, of good birth, you remember those four opulences? Good birth, wealth, beauty, and knowledge. So the Brahmins, those who were born in Brahmin families, they have the good birth. And they often have the knowledge, at least technical knowledge, you know, smart. But they can easily become proud, and we find that that's a part of the corruption in India, this caste consciousness. Just being Brahman by name only, they may know some technicalities, they may know some mantras, but they haven't really got the spirit of the Vedas, which is Krishna consciousness, Vedaisha Sarva Hameva Vedya. And so they try to lord it over the outcasts. They don't make arrangements, as Prabhupada did. He came amongst the outcasts. The lowest of the low. He's living in the Bowery. Those who just drinking and rolling around on the street in America, right in the middle of New York City. But because of his purity and his sincerity, you know, he was able to attract, even in that environment, people like Mukunda Maharaj and others who could help him and start the whole movement up. So we should also see in that way that this whole world is filled with individuals who have Krishna in their heart. And amongst all of them, the human beings who are a little receptive to the message, who we can attract to Krishna in one way or another, they can be saved. They can at least make a little advancement. We may not save them in the, you know, just like we may not be saved in one lifetime. But we can at least start them on the path in any way possible. Just going down to that gas lamp, I mean, it's been 20 years, I think, we've been going down. When I first came, we used to go to La Jolla, but then we stopped and we went to the gas lamp. So there's people who go down there every Friday, and they, you know, we're part of the scene. They expect to see us. In fact, sometimes one day when we didn't come, they wondered, where are you guys? You know, because we're part of the whole thing. So that's their regulation, you know, to sit there and eat fish, whatever, and to hear Hare Krishna. You know, so that, you know, that's some effort. What to speak of going out and really approaching people, giving books, you know, and all of the other arrangements that are made, racking your brain. How can we attract people? How can we transmit the knowledge? Websites, books, you know, email, whatever. Because everyone has the spark of Krishna in their heart. They're all potential devotees. They're all devotees, really. And they've all forgotten, just as we have. So this is the vision. The thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture. The sun and the tiny sparks of fire. So, you know, this is not animate. In one, but still, you see the oneness everywhere. You see that it's all, just like at night, we have the Bhagavad Gita class in 7th chapter, right? And Krishna is describing all the energies. They're my energies, right? We are also part of Krishna's energies. So if you actually see like that, then everything reminds you of Krishna. It takes some more, I'm the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, I'm the fragrance of the earth, I'm the intelligence of the intelligence, the seed of everything. How can you possibly forget Krishna if you remember those verses? If we try to exploit this world, we'll forget those verses. Oh, this taste of, you know, Coca-Cola, I like it. That's as far as it goes. You're forgetting that that's Krishna. It belongs to Krishna. You know, it's coming from him. So only by the process of actually acting as a devotee of Krishna, beginning with chanting the holy name and all of the other things that we do, can this vision really develop. Because it's a function, it's given to us. It's given to us by Krishna, this vision. And then one, you know, can offer respect to everything as sacred. What to speak of, our immediate environment, the temple, the dham, you know. That's you know, through great effort of those who have gone before us and others who are contemporaneous of us, the dham is being maintained as a dham. After all, it's just one little plot of land in San Diego County. But it's more than that. It's a dham because in this place, Krishna is worshipped, Krishna is glorified, should be exclusively, right? That's what makes it a dham, you know? And so we should especially see how everything here is sacred and should be taken care of very nicely, whether it means cleaning, maintaining, paying the rent, or whatever. You know, this is also seva, very important seva. Not only for ourselves, but for anyone who comes in contact with this place. If they see that it's clean, their minds will be uplifted, and vice versa. So that's the point here. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who sees me everywhere doesn't degrade himself by his mind. You know, the mind is now, you know, we're fighting with the mind. The mind is our enemy. And Krishna says, don't degrade yourself by your mind. You know, if you allow the mind to wander everywhere, or you allow the mode to take over, then that mind can drag the soul down. That's what we've been doing for millions of births. So any kind of serious yoga, you know, not some gymnastics, but serious yoga, it works with the mind. How to purify the mind, how to fix it on Krishna, and ultimately how to make the mind your friend. So that it's you know, pulling you toward Krishna rather than pulling you away from Krishna. It takes time. Extensive hearing and chanting and serving and being amongst devotees and being serious, the mind can actually be reformed. It's such a powerful process that practically, as long as you're sane, and you're sane enough, you haven't done too much damage to your brain with any kind of drugs or anything, or traumatic experience, and you can hear and chant, you can be reformed. That's why this Lord Chaitanya showed. He approached the lowest, you know, Jagai and Madhai and others, outcasts, and uplifted them to the highest. So this is a very important vision here. So let's see. Is there any questions on this point, these points? The next verse kind of goes along with it. I'm going to read the next one. Naresh abhikshnam madbhavam pungso bhavayato chirat sparda suya tadaskara sahankara viyantihi. For him who constantly meditates upon my presence within all persons, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness, along with false ego, are very quickly destroyed. Purport. Weak conditioned souls tend to feel rivalry toward our equals, envy toward our superiors, and the desire to belittle our subordinates. These contaminated propensities, along with their very basis, the false ego, can be quickly vanquished by meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within every living being. So, this is, after all, the age of Kali. Kali means quarrel, fighting, right? Now, what is the source of fighting? These things. Envy, rivalry, abusiveness, all of these things arise. When the false ego is raging, so to speak, and we are in the mode of enjoying, accumulating as far as possible for ourselves or for our loved ones, maybe our little family or society. In other words, we've expanded the false ego a little bit. You know, my group, my party, the Irish, the Germans, the Jews, you know, tribal consciousness. Great. You know, that doesn't help. So you have tremendous rivalry, envy, and, you know, the modern day, they're very expert. You know, America is very good at exporting two things. We have two experts. Nobody can rival, you know what it is? Weapons and movies. That's basic. And we have those specialty things, but those are the main two that we make money on. So, great, you know. We're helping to deepen everyone's illusion and create, you know, horrible conflicts. All right, you have two groups fighting against each other. They may have sticks and stones, or they may have arrows. What kind of damage? But you give them tanks, and you give them, you know, depleted uranium weapons, and you give them, you know, big jets and things. Then they cause havoc. This is the great blessing of America on the world. Huge exports of weaponry. So this is the world we live in. It's everywhere. And the more that the economy goes down, the more that people can't get their little, you know, money, this rivalry and envy and hatred just expands more and more. So how to fight that? You can't fight it direct on by having more rivalry, more hatred, more envy, and more fighting. Only by a change of heart. Only by becoming, by creating purity in one's own heart, and expunging these anartas, beginning with lust, anger, and greed, can one be a force for good in this world? So he says these tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness. Now what happens practically for a devotee? Well, you begin to taste the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Krishna is giving you more and more pleasure. That's the result from sincere practice. That's not your motive. Your motive is to please Krishna. But you're watering the root. You're watering the root of the reservoir of pleasure. I mean, forgive the mixed metaphor. But the idea is that you taste the pleasure, you know, from serving Krishna. And it obliterates, you know, the tendency for sense gratification. As long as you're actually in the fire of serving Krishna, hearing and chanting the holy name and serving, you won't feel material desire. Rather, you'll feel love and compassion, you know, to one degree or another, for your devotees certainly, but even for the others. That's actually what awakens. And as soon as you start turning it inside, you know, and thinking of yourself, even spiritually, I want this spiritual happiness or whatever, you know, then you cut the root of that. Then you're back into false ego mode. So the false ego is destroyed by devotional service. The other yoga systems, jnana yoga, karma yoga, even dhyana yoga, do not attack the root of the problem. You can be very proud as a karma yogi, I gave more donation, you know. Jnana yoga, you know, I know more shlokas, I know the Vedas. Yes, I'm a jnani. What to speak of a yogi with all these siddhis, Devasamuni? He just fed his pride and false ego, all of those siddhis. He became envious. He had a rivalry right here with Ambarish Maharaj. He was the great example. But bhakti yoga begins by bowing down. Isn't it? It begins. First thing you do when you come into the temple is you bow down. You chip away at that false ego. Bowing down to the Lord and his devotees. Right? Bow down again. Nama Om Vishnu Bhakti. Trinadapi Suni Jaina. Why? Because that's the basic problem of the living entity in this world is the false ego. That's what binds us here. So we have to realize our actual position, because it's a false ego. It's not a real. It's all false. It's based on a body which is a bag of blood and bones, and we're so proud of it. You know, but the real nature of the soul is to be a humble servant, an agent of Krishna, just meeting his will, and then we become happy. And then we lose our fear, you know. Along with the anger and the rivalry comes great fear and terrorism, you know. The more you contemplate, oh my God, they're coming out to get us, you know. And the guys at the top, they know that they manipulate the people through fear. You frighten the people, they'll do anything. They'll give us security. Big display, you know, 9/11. And now, more than 10 years later, They're still working on that. You know, that's still fighting. So along with the rivalry and the envy and the hatred and the greed and all of that, that goes, the fear goes also. What a wonderful thing. Yeah. So that's, part of it is this seeing, endeavoring to see Krishna within everyone and dealing with everyone in the proper way as the temples of the Lord. You know, how to bring out their, how to best further their awareness of Krishna in their heart, so that they too can be benefited and become agents for helping others. You see how it's catching. Krishna consciousness is catching. That's how it spreads. It's a good disease, if you will. It should be that way. And then we'll nicely advance. So then it's a false ego is quickly destroyed. We want that. We want to be situated always in our constitutional position as servants of Krishna. Any questions or comments? These two verses go together nicely. These three verses, actually. All right, I'll read the translation again. Oh, brilliant Uddhava, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, and who by taking shelter of this divine knowledge offers due respect to everyone, is considered actually wise. Such a man sees equally the Brahmin and the outcast, the thief and the charitable promoter of Brahminical culture, the sun and the tiny sparks of fire, the gentle and the cruel. For him who constantly meditates upon my presence within all persons, the bad tendencies of rivalry, envy, and abusiveness, along with false ego, are very quickly destroyed. Very good instruction. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.